Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Sauce in the City. Today, I am with Jonah Feingold, who is a writer and director here in New York. Thanks so much for being here and helping me test out my new podcast equipment. Really exciting.
It's super legit. You look super legit. You got the Zoom H4n Pro.
I know. I had a lot of people help me, as in one person at B&H. But anyway.
Great store.
Great store. So could you just start by telling me about yourself? Like, where are you from? Where did you go to school? What's your story?
My story. I'm from New York City. I went to high school at a place called Fieldston, which is in Riverdale.
I have a lot of friends who went there.
You have a lot of Fieldston friends.
Yeah.
I'll get to play the geography game.
Oh, yeah. Definitely play the name game.
Then I went to USC for film school out in LA, and I lived in LA for almost 10 years. I just moved back to New York to make a movie. And in a nutshell, the story question's so hard. How do people typically answer what's their story question?
Just like this. Like, just where like did this? You grow up? Where, you know.
Grew up here. Love New York. Don't like LA. Really hate LA.
Really? I was going to ask like how.
Tons of hatred.
Because they're very, I feel like you ever love one and hate the other.
Yeah. I mean, I was there for, it's so funny, like perfect example. Like, I hate LA. I lived there for 10 years. You know, it's almost like one of those like, you hate somebody, but you date them for like 8 years. You know, it's that kind of thing.
Yeah, you just don't make the change until too late, I guess.
Yeah, but until it just happens. And it's like, oh, okay, wow, I'm so much happier now. So don't like LA. Really happy to be back in New York. I love movies. I love Disney movies. And Disney Plus has been great. So I'm really happy to live in the time we get Disney Plus.
That's true. Okay, so what was it like growing up in New York? Because it's, I feel like, a very different upbringing than, you know, me living in a suburb in New Jersey.
Are you from New Jersey?
Yeah.
Where in New Jersey are you from?
I'm from Rumson.
Okay. Is that near Parker House?
Yes.
I've been to the Parker House. That place is amazing.
That place is great, but when you're, you know, at 10, you can't.
I could see it being fun at 10, too, though, because you have, lunch.
I don't know if you're, I guess you can go to dinner there. But, yeah, I mean, in terms of, like, the New York scene, like, how do you like that?
I love being raised in New York. You know, people say, what's it like being raised here? I'm like, what's it like being raised Kansas? What did you guys do on the weekends? How did you guys didn't take an elevator? You know, where did you walk your dogs? Everyone's like, oh, dogs shouldn't be raised in the city. My hot take is that dogs are actually much happier in New York. There's more to do. They walk around. They have tons of dog friends.
That's true.
You have packs of dogs walking around at all times. I think here and in Paris is maybe that's because in Paris, you can bring your dog wherever you want, restaurant, you know, wise. And so that's how I would equate growing up in New York, is that New York is how you think a dog would have fun in like a backyard versus having fun in a city. People don't get it, but New York is actually an amazing place to grow up.
Yeah. I mean, the world is your oyster by the time you're, you know, going to middle school. And then, so did you always want to come back to New York? Did you think you'd wanted to?
Always.
Eventually? Okay.
I wanted to go to college somewhere that wasn't New York. I was like, no NYU, because it's too New York.
Yeah, I was going
to want to go be. I actually always wanted to be from California. It's so funny. I used to always grow up telling people I was from California. I wanted to be from California. I was like obsessed with the OC.
True.
Lindsay and I would like do Seth and Summer like cosplay.
<That's>
like,
great.
But like it was like weird scenes we would do. And now it's just so, I literally wanted to be from California. My mom's from California.
Okay.
And now I could not resent it more as a place, which is so, I always kind of reflect on that. I'm like, what was I thinking?
Yeah, well, I guess you had to experience it. Otherwise, it'd be like a whole what if kind of thing.
Exactly.
But did you like USC? And did you study film there?
Studied film there. Loved USC. Perfect dichotomy of like social life and film life. Although film life is still social.
Mm-hmm.
My best friends, my like, you know, five closest friends were my same closest friends from day one of USC.
Yeah, and I had that with my school.
Where'd you go?
Didn't love it. I went to Johns Hopkins.
Oh, cool. You didn't love it?
It was
did Eliza Beeney go to Johns Hopkins?
I'm not sure.
Copy.
So did you always want to get into film? Like, how were you always interested in movies, or where did that come from?
I've wanted to direct movies since I was straight up 2 years old. I saw a movie called Hook, which is, are you familiar with the movie Hook? Robin Williams plays Peter Pan.
No, I was going to say, is it related to Captain Hook?
It is. It's about Peter Pan is played by Robin Williams, and he grows up to be a lawyer. He forgets that he was Peter Pan. His kids get kidnapped, and he has to go to Neverland to find it. Julia Roberts is in it. Dustin Hoffman's in it.
Wow, I've never heard of this movie. But
oh, it's like a 90s kids movie. Yeah, it's like a, you've definitely seen it, but you just don't remember it, maybe.
Possibly.
saw that movie, knew instantly right there and then that I wanted to make movies for the rest of my life. This was not like something that came to me in college or after college. It's like, oh, I want to direct movies because it's cool now. Straight up, it's all I've ever known and wanted to do. So USC was the best film school, and mm-hmm. that was like my number one, two, and three choice. Obviously, like I didn't necessarily have the grades for it. Half the people that get into USC are like the type that literally think of some creative way to get in over actually just having the grades for it. I'm not talking about paying your way in, which I realize is a thing right now.
And I was like, oh, where's Aunt Becky?
By creative, I mean like making a movie or a presentation or hustling and meeting every single That's professor cool, there and having them vote for you, you know? Yeah. So that was the way that I approached it. And film has always been my passion.
And I remember you saying on Lindsay's podcast that you make When Harry Met Sally type movies, which, by the way, is an amazing movie.
Amazing movie.
Focus on romantic comedies, though, right?
Love rom-coms. That's what I want to do right now. I think it's a great genre, yeah.
And why is that? What do you want to focus on?
Two reasons. One, I love movies that are... I make movies for other people. You know, I make movies for people who want to escape. I'm not making a movie for like Jonah. I'm not making a movie to make like a statement. Although I am trying to make statements. I'm not trying to make like a fucking... Sorry, can I curse?
Yeah.
I'm not trying to make like a political statement or like something. I just want a movie that you and your friend can toss on the TV, talk about and watch and laugh with.
So mm-hmm.
And ideally you're watching it with someone who you might be romantically interested in or don't know that they are romantically interested in you. And you guys have this like debate over, oh my God, would I do that or I would not do that?
Yeah.
And so it kind of causes, you know, it starts to talk about all these things. Dating, obviously something that we're all wildly misunderstood. We all think we're the one who's like going to be single forever, but that doesn't make any sense if we all think that.
Yeah.
So I love the idea that movies can show, you know, we can make a movie and we can be like, oh, I'm not alone in the way that I feel. So rom-com is a great genre right now just because the game has changed. It changes every day. There's a new term, new dating term every single day.
Yeah. One thing I liked about your two short films was like how you really depicted romance in the digital age. And I think that's like the first time I've really seen that, like with maybe Josh, for example, it's from the point of view of an iPhone, which is so creative. And the fact that, you know, you see the title and you know exactly why it's called that, you know?
Right, the title. It's the title's the best part.
Josh, because the number's not saved, which I thought was hilarious.
Thanks.
And then another one I thought was like, I mean, and then your other film, What Are We? Mm. Which was like, we're one, what was I saying? But just like the how they communicate is, I think, very, I don't know if culturally relevant is the right word, but it's just very relevant to now.
I think culturally, I mean, that's the idea, yeah. Right? It's relatability. And it's like a lot of these, maybe Josh was a concept that was for Sofia Vergara's Facebook Watch series. And the pitch was literally, I want to make You've Got Mail on a phone screen.
Mm-hmm.
And how many times have we talked to someone from an app for maybe even weeks and never met them? And that's where that concept came from. And we were like, how can we dig into this, you know, and how can we make it like weird in the sense you have to watch on your phone? And that's sort of where the maybe Josh concept came from. But, you know, the beautiful thing about that experience was it was a great way to exercise making texting conversations both relatable but engaging and cinematic.
Yeah.
Because what you then realize is that the way that you actually operate on your phone is, you know, my job was to play with my phone constantly while we were making that movie. So to figure out what we would do when we were wait to respond to someone. So, yeah, it was really cool. It was really...
That's so interesting. And I think one of the things, I mean, I wrote down in my notes here is I'm really interested to hear your thoughts on the different, you know, texting behaviors and dating behaviors that are depicted in your films. And, you know what I mean? And how you would, I guess, deal with that situation if it was your own life. Mm. Like, for example, in What Are We? One character says that the person who cares the least in a relationship has the most control.
Look at you quoting the movie. Thanks for doing your research. You know, that's really cool.
Research.
It's the first time I ever had someone quote a movie on any sort of conversation.
I'm honored that I'm that person.
Really cool.
So first of all, do you agree with that?
The person who cares the least has the most control. There is a musical number and a line about that. And I actually recently tweeted something that is an update to that, which is the person that texts the least is in the most control. And that is I used to believe the first version. Now I believe the latter, which is, you know what? I believe it all. It's sad, but I think it is kind of true. Do you agree? I mean, do you think the person that cares the least has the most control?
I think definitely in like the infancy of a relationship, because it depends. I don't know, because if it depends what the motives are, like for texting less, if you're deliberately texting less to play a game, then you're not in the most control because you're out there, you're, you know, making the conscious effort not to text.
True, which means you care too much.
Which means you care too much. Yeah. But at the same time, that's all the same game that we're all playing. So then you're all texting, not a lot. Like, it's like a vicious, messed up cycle that's just so confusing, I think.
So confusing. I think, and maybe you're right. So
it's the person who cares least. It's
the person who cares the least is in the most control, which is to say that I think great relationships, you are an equilibrium of caring. That could mean, so you obviously care about each other a lot because you both like love each other.
Yeah.
But that's still still an equal amount of caring. You know, you're both at like 50-50, therefore making 100, as opposed to like someone being at like 40 and someone being at like 10. And then you could also both be at 10. And that is a successful thing too, because let's say you have somebody that you sort of like best friends with benefits. You have a friend with benefits. You probably care about each other 20-20 each. So you're not at that full bar length, but you care the same amount. The ratio is still the same.
Yeah, but I don't know. I have my own thoughts about friends and benefits. I don't think it's possible.
Oh, we should. Okay, well, we'll get to that because that's what the new movie's about. So we got. Oh, yeah.
I have thoughts on that, but no, I think that's interesting. And I mean, one thing that I talked about a little bit with, do you know David Yaris?
He's the founder
of J Swipe.
I think we're Instagram friends. Yeah, I don't know him personally. Yeah.
Just how, you know, the dating in the age of like dating apps and how it's kind of misconstrued romance, I think. I mean, I have my own like opinions about that, but I was wondering how, like, what your thoughts were on that, and if you think that the way in which we quote unquote date now affects people's mental health in any way.
The way that we date now affects people's mental health. I think it has to, because the way we date now is almost for like sport and this is not everyone obviously, but like a lot of people. I had a coffee with a friend and she told me she had 2 dates on that day already. How is that your mental? I mean, that can't be good for your mental health. Or maybe it is. Maybe it is good for your mental health, but it's still affecting the way that we think. I think it's difficult to keep track. I think that with the ability of, I love the dating apps, some of them. I think they're great, but there's an overload, no matter who you are, of information and of people. Mm-hmm. And unless you have like strict rules for yourself, i.e. I'm only going to really talk to 1 or 2 people at the same time, you're overloaded with people and with the emotional connections that come with that, that I think subconsciously and consciously sometimes is going to mess with you in a negative way.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, it's the ultimate paradox of choice.
Yeah, exactly. It is the paradox. Yes.
Because it's literally like this person's great, but there's, you know, 5 more out there that like me or something like that.
Exactly. And then you're like, are they great? And it's not even like they need to do something wrong to get you not to want to continue talking. It's just literally like, it's also the context of talking to someone on an app has changed, where because it's so common now, you treat it like a common thing, i.e. a text or an email or a tweet. So your frequency on the app and off the app is like, I'm in a cab on the subway, let me go on Hinge real quick.
Yeah.
And but it really shouldn't be that. It should be like you're writing someone a fucking love letter. Sorry for cursing again. But it's like the social context that is now around the vernacular of dating apps that has really just made it something that is way too, doesn't require much thought.
Yeah. And it also, I think, takes away from how we are in person. Like,
interesting.
I mean, maybe less so for girls, but like, I mean, I feminism, but in terms of going to a bar, I feel like men are more hesitant to approach women now because they don't have that screen to look at.
Well, I think the men are more hesitant to approach women at a bar for other reasons.
Yeah, true.
Mainly because like, hey, hi, like, you're super cute. And then like if someone like takes that the wrong way, next thing you know, you're getting blown up on Twitter. This guy just told me I'm cute at a bar. Like,
yeah,
he's trying to,
that's true. That's something to take into account, but I don't know.
By the way, there are the right ways to do it.
Just to give an example. Yeah. But it's interesting. I mean, I personally get the appeal of dating apps. I know people have a lot of like luck on them and I think they're great, but not for me. And I think I like realized that.
Are you not on the apps?
No.
Have you ever been on a dating app before?
Yes. So, like way too much. But then I realized I remember you talking with Lindsay and saying that you don't like first dates, and me neither. It's like an interview.
True.
But I feel like I'm really good at them.
Interviews or first dates? First dates
and interviews because I'm good at both.
Yes.
Because I like to talk and I like to engage people and learn about people. But I don't know. I find it so boring. And it's just like, I mean, I also feel like I finally came to the realization that I need to be friends with the person first.
That's a mature realization. And that's a cool thing. I think that is.
I mean, but definitely.
For a long-term situation, it sounds like you need to be friends first.
Yeah. Or just for like anything, for me to feel like any emotional connection.
Right. Because maybe you're just dead inside and you have no heart.
I'm like, I have other things to do than sit at this date. Like, I don't want to, like, I feel like, you know, in the first 5 to 10 minutes, whether you're going to go on a second date.
This is a theory that I'm trying to, I think we should normalize. There's two things I believe we should be normalizing. One is men's skincare regimen, which I feel passionately about. I'm all about that right now.
That's true.
I'm trying to get in that game. That's a joke / not really. Number two is we should normalize pre-dates. Here's what I mean.
Like speed dates.
Not a speed date. It's pre-date. It's not, there's no, it's basically a set amount of time. Coffee meetings, we all do them. We all love them. They're great. Mm-hmm. I think coffee meetings should only be 30 minutes. Knowing that there's a end point that's almost too soon makes you get to the good shit quickly.
Yeah, that's so true.
So now that's business stuff. Dating wise, depending on the person and the context, if you don't know this person at all, and I'm not talking about a FaceTime or a phone call. I'm talking about a 20 to 30 minute time. You both know that's going to only be that long.
Yeah.
Sit down. You could do a drink. You could do a coffee. You could go for a walk around the block. Be like, okay, you're someone who's just normal enough that I'm willing to open this book and read more.
Yeah. And I think the time limit is key because then it takes away the whole like, oh, like I just remembered I forgot to feed my dog and
I gotta be up early for a meeting, like just like be like, we're both gonna be out of here in 20 minutes, and tell me where you're from, what do you like, this is what you're and meanwhile we're processing what do they sound like, how do they move, you know, what's their energy, the shit that really matters that you can't get through the app.
I agree. And so that kind of, I guess, answers my question of what's your ideal first date.
Well, I've never done this before, so I've never done that.
Isn't there an app for that, like coffee and bagels?
Coffee and bagel. I'm not gonna download an app called Coffee and Bagel. That's a horrible branding name. Sorry, guys. Ideal first date is someone who I know is sort of either a friend or is like a distant person I've always sort of had a crush on, and it's just drinks at like a cute little, I call them CLSs, cute little spot. Mm. Candlelit tavern vibes.
Oh, that's what you had in the movie.
Yeah, CLS is everywhere. Yeah, and tavern vibes, and we're just maybe wearing turtlenecks, and it's just like a cozy thing. We're having hot toddies, and we're just talking, but there's like a good energy.
Yep,
it's all energy. You know, it's all like all energy. It's all vibe.
Do you have any like funny dating stories, first date stories?
None that I can tell that aren't they're too fresh. Oh. That it's gonna be very obvious should this get reposted. And then she listens to it. But like, I never really had even a bad date is a great story is something I like to tell people.
That's a good way to look at it.
Yeah.
As with anything.
Yeah. So, you know, do you have any, I feel like you must have some, sounds like something took you off the apps. Maybe it was a bad first.
No, that was like a bad last. I was like, yep, no, never. That time I called Carly and asked her to pretend she was locked out.
Is this Carly in the next room?
Yeah.
Hi, Carly. Shout out, Carly.
No, I'm just thinking of a time so my sister set me up with someone like 3 years ago, which was hilarious because she's 2 years younger than I am.
and I had no idea what he looked like. So I get to the bar and I see a guy sitting down like alone. I'm like, okay, that's probably Matt. And I go sit down across from him and he just looks at me like, what the hell? Like, who is this? Like, who are you?
Oh, no.
And then I see like a different guy walk in. I'm like, shit, that's Matt. And he saw the whole thing.
No way.
It was hilarious.
Oh my God. Did you, but you guys laughed about it and it was okay? Or
like we never saw each other again, but it was funny.
That is really funny. That's tough when that happens.
It's a good thing to incorporate into a short film, I think. It's
okay.
Really, like cliche almost.
I'm going to take it. It's going to be the next thing.
Okay. And then my other question kind of about your movie, specifically the one, What Are We, is based on the question or the title of the movie. Mm. I think that's another thing that's wrong with millennial dating culture is that there's so many different like relationship statuses or labels, but none of them work. Mm-hmm. And then people take things like, oh, what are we, as like a very intense, like, oh my God, they must be super into me. So what is your take on that?
I think the what are we conversation is basically just a way to engage in talking about how you both feel about each other. Do you watch The Bachelor at all?
Oh, yes.
Great. I'm obsessed. Me and my like four best friends in LA have a league. I've won 2 out of 3. I picked Jed, one off of a technicality, obviously, in that case. But that show, everyone can, you can love it, you can hate it. The one thing I think that it's amazing about that show is that they are locked in this world with no phones and all they have is each other, but every single conversation they have pretty much after the first date is a check-in emotionally on how they're feeling about each other, which I love. And
yeah, that's true.
They never need to say what are we, because you instantly assume that they're dating because there's no other option. I think what are we is a great way to have a conversation about how you feel about each other.
Yes, which should just be more incorporated earlier on.
Exactly. Which should just be a way that you're like, you know, at the end of a first date, I've sort of come to terms with the fact that I say like, I'll just point blank be like, I like you and I want to see you again.
Yeah, that's true. And then on the other hand, just to not ghost, like, you know what? You're a really cool person, but I'm just not vibing.
Exactly. I don't feel like chemistry between us, which by the way, I think slowly I am sensing that ghosting is becoming, we're all becoming better at not ghosting people.
Yeah, which is good because it didn't exist like, I don't know.
A week ago.
Yeah, however many years ago.
Well, yeah.
The Bachelor is a very interesting, though. Did you read the book? Like, I think it's called like Behind the Final Rose or something like that.
Whoa, no.
It is insane. It's like an expose.
No way.
It is wild what they do. Like,
so
the producers.
Give me an example.
Okay.
Besides booking Chase Rice to come play in his own fucking episode. When
yeah. Oh,
Victoria
my.
F. dated Chase Rice.
I was like, oh, wow. Surprise there. But so the producers, like there was, I forget the guy's name, but he and the woman producer like had like a romantic relationship. I don't know. There was a lot of drama with that. And they do things where they'll write down like a woman's insecurities on like every woman will be like, okay, she like her dad passed away.
This
and
is
like,
not is this true?
I swear to God, you have to read this book. It's insane. I still watch The Bachelor even after reading it because, well, whatever. And they'll be like, she gets emotional. Like, does she has body issues and things like that. So they'll deliberately be like, oh, like you have to wear the bikini. And like to the girl who's like self-conscious about her body or something like that. Or for example, if someone's, you know how even in the beginning when someone leaves, they're like crying and they're like, oh my God, I'm never going to find love.
Yeah.
So sometimes a person will be leaving and they'll be like, so like, aren't you sad that you're leaving? And they'll be like, oh, you know, I wasn't really feeling it with like Colton or something. And like, but aren't you worried you're going to be alone forever? Like, here, just take a tequila shot, sweetie. And then all of a sudden they're crying and they're like, oh, I'm never going to find love.
Right.
Wild. Definitely read the book. But I still watch the show. I have a league.
Who do you think is winning the season? And if you know spoilers, then don't.
I don't know spoilers. I think.
You can give top
Madison,
two.
Madison. Is that the girl?
Madison P. The one that Peter gave a picture of his family at his vows renewal.
I love her. I really like her.
Which is insane.
That's insane.
That's a red flag.
Yeah, that's a lot.
That's a runaway. If a guy gave you, if a first date guy says, hey, come meet me out. We're going to go have a fun night. Takes you to drinks. Then takes you to his parents' 31st wedding anniversary vows renewal. You hopefully run away.
And then you go to like a dance. Like, oh my God, they went to the the dance, like, or the random performer.
Oh, that band that was in the back. Yeah,
and they all show up.
They're like grinding, like making out, and then this family. Yeah, the family shows up.
So funny. And then I think the blonde nurse, Victoria P.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I like them. And then I think what's her face is gunning for the Bachelorette.
Hannah
Ann.
She's too Hannah G to be the Bachelorette, though. That's the thing.
You think she's too Hannah G?
She's not relatable. Hannah B is relatable because she's like a mess.
Yeah.
And Hannah Ann isn't a mess.
True. But I think she's gunning for the Bachelorette. I don't think. I think Pete's like, eh.
In the same way that Kayla Miller-Keys was going to be Bachelorette, mm-hmm. but guess what?
She's with Dean.
You'll just, whatever. Yeah. She'll just get an endorsement from Revolve, or what's that company called, that club? Yeah. And she'll just be an Instagram, which they already was an Instagram model.
Which they already
model.
Are, yeah.
Yeah.
Wild. Okay, so kind of going back to, like, mental health and its relationship to relationships or, like, dating and things, because this is, like, a mental health podcast. I'm curious to see, like, I don't know. I think one thing that's really hard about dating, especially in a place like New York, is that in the same way that it is with, like, friendships and all of that, is, like, even though there's so many people here, it's almost makes you feel more alone, because you're like, why am I single? Like, or why am I not going on a date when there's so many people here on this island? Why am I still alone? Like, there must be something wrong with me. And it's kind of like this vicious cycle that is very ironic, because a lot of people are thinking that same thing. A lot of people are like, I'm so alone in this. And even though I'm not saying that that's, you know, only with dating, I think it's with friendships and maybe your work colleagues are going all out together and you're not, or something like that. But romance is definitely like a big part of that. And I was wondering what your thoughts were on that, and if you ever experienced those feelings.
I'm not one who ever feels lonely. I've seen loneliness in my like binoculars, and I've been near it, but I've never actually embraced it and hugged it and felt lonely.
That's good.
I mean, yeah, maybe for better or for worse, but people always say, I mean, I guess it's a tough question for me to answer about New York, because I'm back in New York, where I thought LA was a very lonely city.
That's true.
You want to feel lonely, go to LA. New York is not a lonely place.
Yeah, I guess that's a really good point.
We're all in the same show here. We're all in like the backstage of a musical. Like whenever I walk it through the subways underground, I always feel like we're like the Disney characters, like, you know, walking underneath the park, like out of costume. Like, I just feel like New York, we're all in one big fucking proscenium show. And it could not be more unified. Like, if you're lonely, you can go to a bar or a pizza place. And, like, you're going to be with somebody. And you can talk to anyone.
Yeah.
It's like an open world video game. Everyone here is talkable characters.
No, I definitely, I agree with that. Especially now, I think that's how I approach it more. And just going to Union Square and things like that. And I think if you're the kind of person who is very, like, outgoing or energetic, then you can make, the world can be your oyster if you like let it. Like,
absolutely.
New York can be your oyster.
Yeah.
I would not last day in New York. In LA, I can't even drive. So
so you technically wouldn't even last.
I wouldn't last. anyway, so I'm going to end by asking some final questions.
Love final questions.
That get really deep.
Oh shit. Okay. Then maybe I don't.
I don't know. They're fine. I never know how to preface this. Okay. First question. What's one thing in your life that's happened to you that's made you a stronger person today?
Zoe. One thing in my life that's happened to me that's made me
a stronger person
today.
What doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
True.
Kelly Clarkson.
It's happened to me in my life that's made me stronger. Can I put an interesting twist to this question?
Yeah, of course.
I don't think anything's ever happened to me that's made me stronger. I think I've done things to my life that have made me stronger.
That's fair.
I.e. reactionary things.
Okay. Like what?
Example. This is always a kind of a it's not funny. It's not a funny story, but I was once I've had like sort of one very, very serious girlfriend in my life. Mm-hmm. And in between, which sort of taught me on my foundation for how I approach relationships, which is maybe good, maybe bad. And one winter eve, a couple of years ago, she sent me like essentially like a breakup text. And I was like, I'm not going to let us break up. It's like a winter storm. We're both home in New York because we were both living in LA too. And I'm like, I'm going to come over. She lives in Westchester. I live in the city. I'm going to come over and like, we're going to talk about this like face to face. You're not going to break up with me over a fucking text message.
Yeah.
So I get in the car and I drive on like to Westchester, snowstorm. On the highway is black ice, which I'm not sure if anyone here is familiar with that. You can't see it. You can feel it. So I skid. I 50 feet in front of me is a car that's fully stopped and comes out of nowhere. And I skid and I stop and I'm on this black ice. I'm like, why am I skidding? There's nothing here, but it's of course the ice. I stop right before I hit this car.
Oh my God.
But of course the person behind me, not in the best shape car, slams into behind me. So I'm still fine.
That's why I don't drive.
The car is beat up from the back. I'm still fine. I pull over to the right hand side of the highway. It's now a 20 car pileup. Wasn't like my fault. Like, it was a whole thing. No one could see this ice. This car that was way in front of us had started it. I get out of the car. I start to cross the highway because everyone's piling up because there's like a family and they're like trying to unload their kids and everyone's fine, safe. Out of fucking nowhere, a car comes, rams me. My body like hits me. I'm down the fucking ground. I wake up. I come out of nowhere. I get back up like almost like you go under a wave in an ocean. And I'm like, am I okay? And everyone's looking at me like, what the fuck? And I'm like, is there glass in my face? I have like a giant scar on my leg. Crazy thing is, I was totally fine.
So you got hit by a car. I got hit by a moving car. In your car, and then you got hit by a car.
Correct. And holy I got hit shit. By a moving car. Like you could say, that doesn't make any sense. You would have had broken bones. But like I have this phone that I was holding, this iPhone, and it was shattered to pieces. And like everyone saw it, and it was insane. Now, there was no like life epiphany from this. It wasn't like, oh my God, you only live once. Like maybe I'm not scared of getting hit by a car again, which is like the weird thing. But it more so was I've now reflected on that moment in time at the relationship because I was driving to go basically get broken up with, which is the irony here.
Yeah. And you were like, oh, I literally just got hit by a car.
Well, I woke up, I got back to my house like 4 hours later, like to a bunch of texts being like, where are you? I'm like, you will never believe what just happened to me. And I think that thing taught me was a catalyst for teaching me that when something's not working out, rather than force it to make it work and get hit by a car, don't do it anymore. And
yeah, save like yourself. If there's ever a sign that it wasn't meant to work out.
There were multiple signs. And so I have things for everything in life. I think it can be your job. If you're desperately unhappy and you're sure this is the right thing to do, trust your gut. If you're in a relationship and your friends and family don't like the person, then you are wrong. You and your excuse of you just don't know them like I do is incorrect.
That's true.
And in the moment, you don't think that. You're like, nope, they just don't get them. But no, you are the one who's wrong, and your friends and family are right.
Yeah, I agree with that.
That was a loaded answer, but hopefully maybe there's...
No, that's actually... I mean, it's a crazy, weird metaphor. That's true. I mean, if it's not meant to be, you'll know. Okay, second question that's somewhat related. Do you believe everything happens for a reason?
I tell myself to believe that everything happens for a reason. I don't know if I believe it.
No, I agree with that. I think my thought on it is that should be everyone's outlook or like view on life, because then you're not like, oh, poor me, this happened, I'm fucked. It's like, okay, that was meant to happen. Like, what can we learn from that?
Yeah, that was meant to happen. Or how can I control this in a way to get what I want?
Yeah.
You know, like I think we all love being a victim of our own unfortune. And I don't love people who are like down on themselves. So like, if you don't like just something didn't go your way, then make it go your way.
Yeah.
Safely. And obviously like with respect to the situation, but you know, like don't never give my favorite quote, Galaxy Quest, never give up, never surrender.
Oh, that was another one of my questions.
What favorite quote?
Yeah.
That is my favorite quote. Yeah.
Never give up, never surrender.
It's from Galaxy Quest. Yeah.
When's your birthday?
August 6th, 1990. When's yours?
September 21st.
Oh.
21st night of September.
I have some. Yeah. It was Virgo. The 21st night
best of birthday. September. So what is that, like a Leo?
Yeah. That's a Leo.
Yeah.
That's a Leo.
One of my best friends is Leo.
Named Leo or is also a Leo?
Is a Leo.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess third question or fourth question, because I already know your favorite quote.
You do.
If a crystal ball could tell you anything about yourself, your life, your future, or anything else, what would you most want to know?
I think, and I'm not just saying this because I'm on a podcast and because people will listen to this, I would want to know that something about my friends or my family being like getting what they want. Does that answer? I don't really want to know. I know my future. Like, I don't want to know my future.
Yeah.
I don't want to know what's going to happen. I don't want to, like, the obvious answer would come to mind is like, is everything going to be okay?
Yeah.
Everything's going to be fine. Like, yeah, it's, you know, hopefully, or it's not. But I think I'd want to make sure that I just want to know more, like, because my mind is split into two things. My insane hunger and drive towards succeeding as a filmmaker and mm-hmm. being able to make my art professionally. And then the other portion of my mind is my closest friends and family, are they all happy and going to be okay? And do I need to worry about anybody?
Oh, I like that, actually. Yeah, that you get to know what they're really feeling just so you can allocate your efforts.
Like, correctly. I could go 1,000% in on everything else creatively in my life if I just knew that everyone else was okay and that I didn't have to fall asleep panicking about somebody else's, not panicking, fall asleep, you know, being mm-hmm. like, I hope that they get what they, you know, I hope that that works out.
Are you an empath? Like, do you feel other people's pain?
Do I feel? I don't know. I've never actually used that word before. Or
really?
I've heard it. I've never empathy. I think it's just, I definitely do, but I'm more so am like hyper aware of how people are feeling in a moment. Like hyper aware of like people, what they think of stuff. I mean, my biggest flaw is that I need to be liked. That's, you know.
Do you have Virgo in you?
I don't know. That's like a classic Leo thing, though, is that you need everyone to like you.
Yeah, that's true.
You want every... I don't need... I want everyone to like
yeah.
me.
Yeah. I am like that, too. Or I get really nervous if people are mad at me, but that's also anxiety.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. You don't know, but no one wants somebody... Why do you want someone to be mad at you?
I know. That's the thing. And
who
then
likes
you,
that?
And then you ask if they're mad at you, and then they get more... They're like, why are you asking? Like, stop texting me. And I'm like, but I don't do that anymore.
In relationships, yeah. If a guy... If, I guess in all relationships, if you ask a girl, are you mad at me? Then you're never going to get the answer you want.
Yeah, I wouldn't know that as a woman, I don't think.
Well, has a guy ever been like, are you mad? And
yeah.
Did you ever just say
And then I'm
yes?
like, oh my gosh, I'm listening to myself like a year ago when I would text my friends. But I've gotten better at that. My next question is, what do you love most about yourself?
My eyes.
That's the most superficial answer
I'm
I've ever had on
with
this
you. I'm kidding.
You do have nice eyes.
My hair. No, thank you. Joke. And I love that. I do love myself. That is true. I am my biggest fan. And I think I love people who are their biggest fans as well. Not in an egotistical way, from the sense that they like promote themselves as a self-made brand, because we all have those friends, but like love, be your biggest fan. Have fun. You can laugh with yourself.
Yeah.
I love that I approach life with a lighthearted sensibility, that nothing is ever serious, too serious. You know, and I think I could probably, with the exception of like war, I think I could be tossed into almost any situation and thrive.
That's
a certain
great
extent.
Quality. It's funny. I was just thinking this. Well, I mean, I was thinking it before, but no, like, not calling out other people that I've interviewed for this podcast, but you are like by far the person most genuinely like not self-critical, which is rare because it's a mental health podcast. So most of the people I've talked to are like, yes, I'm depressed, I'm anxiety, I hate myself, which like I feel a lot, but yeah. It's refreshing to see the other side of like what humanity is like.
There are some of us out there who can love ourselves, you know.
Yeah, it's really refreshing. It's like, okay, look, this is possible, and it's not weird.
Yeah, unrealistically loving oneself is the fun way. But like, but on the flip side of that, I also do have trouble connecting and understanding people who doubt themselves. I hate people that doubt themselves. Not to the point that I can bring them up either. It's more like, why would you ever doubt? I can get mad at people.
Interesting. So but what if it's like What if they can't help it?
Well, what do you do when you have a friend who doubts himself?
I mean, I doubt myself all the time.
So what do you do to yourself? What do you say to yourself to not, I mean, obviously you don't all the time. Like you have a podcast, well, you have, you know, we're here. Like there's things that I seek.
But that's because of like, I don't know. I mean, therapy and like addressing it.
Addressing it. Right.
I mean, I'm better about it now, but my sister used to always call me out and say like, why are you so mean to yourself? Like that whole quote of like, speak to yourself like you would speak to one of your best friends is so important, but we are like so hard on ourselves and we do like speak so negatively to ourselves and it's not good. It's just rare nowadays, sadly. And that's why, you know, all these different mental illnesses are on the rise. Sure. And suicide's at an all time high, like because people are so self-critical and don't talk about it, which is obviously why I have this podcast to get people to open up and share with me. So then by opening that door and letting themselves feel vulnerable, people then can, you know, feel like, oh, this guest of Solace in the City felt like that, like it's normal. Or
yeah,
that's what I've just found by making myself vulnerable on like Instagram and other social media platforms is like people then see that as an opportunity to confide in me.
That's awesome.
Which is like funny because I'm a mess.
Well, that's the thing. We're all. That's that. And it, but where do you stand on people who post selfies of them crying?
Depends where.
A cry selfie on Instagram.
Like real Instagram.
What's fake Instagram? Oh, Finstagram. You Finsta. Mean? Oh, I know. I mean, like someone's like crying about something, takes out their phone, snaps it, and like writes whatever it is they're crying about, and then posts on their story.
If it's a fake Instagram, then it's fine because I do that all the fucking time.
Okay.
Well, not really, but no. I actually had my friend on this podcast because she's very into like Finsta. She's TikTok famous. And
this is your TikTok famous friend. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we just talked about how Finsta can be an outlet for her. She is. She just got, it's actually hilarious. She texted me or she posted on Finsta the other day that she recently got reached out by like Fit Tea.
The company.
The skinny teas that are just sure. Make you like shit your pants.
They're
laxative teas.
Oh my God. Take that brand endorsement. She's got it.
I guess. But like, oh my gosh. So classic, stereotypical. But no, Finsta, I think it depends what you're looking to get out of it. I mean, if you're posing it for, you know, people would be like, oh, are you okay? Like, don't do that. Rather just go to your friend and be like, hey, like I've had a shit day.
Right. Like,
I'm not feeling my best.
So that's that I love.
Yeah. And I think that's like when I personally would post a, you know, crying, quote unquote, crying selfie on like my fake Instagram. It's not so people like are like, oh my God, are you okay? It's more like, hey, everyone, not great. Like, catch you later. Because, like, I obviously have a selective group.
On the Finsta. Yeah, right. So it's a selective friend circle that you got on there. That makes sense.
But
get behind that.
But I get what you're saying. I don't like when people use their sadness as, like, a means to get attention.
Mm-hmm.
So it depends. But I do really admire people who, like, go at life with, like, full energy and are genuinely just like admit that they love themselves because that's really rare now.
Yeah. Well, we should all love ourselves more.
Agreed.
Blessings.
Okay. Last question.
Yes.
How do you find solace in the city?
Can you like physically or emotionally?
Like when you're, not even like when you're having a bad day, like what's your perfect day?
Perfect day.
Like what would you do?
Got it. Great. Great question. Perfect day is wake up at 5 a.m. for a 6 a.m. call time. Go to set. Direct somewhere between 5 and 6 pages of a once rehearsed dialogue heavy New York walk and talk scene for my next movie. We shoot 5 to 6 pages. It's maybe fall or summer. And we're shooting in the Lower East Side. Then day goes great. We wrap at 6 p.m., 12-hour day. Then I am greeted by my golden retriever puppy named Birdie. We hug, we embrace. And then me and my Parisian Jewish girlfriend, Marion. This is a joke now. I don't know. She does not exist. That part doesn't exist. But me and the actors and any of the crew, we then go to J.G. Mellon on 74th and 3rd Avenue.
Yeah.
After we've wrapped, we have some drinks, we have some burgers, and we all go to sleep. And then we do the same thing the next day. That is my dream day.
Okay. So that's how you find solace.
Yes.
Love it. All right. Also, I have a side note written down.
Love side notes.
Because I remember you saying that when you were little, you would record videos and music videos with your sister.
Yes.
I would also do that with my sister.
Did you really?
Yes. And my best friend. We did some great music videos to Avril Lavigne songs and one to the Black Parade, which is really emo.
Wait, are you serious? I'm a big My Chemical Romance fan. Like,
yeah.
Are you still MCR?
No, not really. But it's like a really frightening video. It was me and my friend Holland. And we like... My parents, when we showed it to our parents, they were like, what the fuck is wrong
with
you
guys? That's a big one to show the parents.
You guys are like 11. Why are you...
My father.
Yeah. Oh, great song.
Into the city. I just literally listening to the Helena, you know, Helena, obviously the song.
I wasn't actually a big My Chemical Romance fan. I don't know why we chose that song.
It's a great song.
It's also like a 6-minute song.
It's a very long song.
Yeah, I'll try to find that.
Please do.
But anyways, thank you so much for coming on my podcast and being first guest to try out these new
What I can't, you know, I heard there's new gear and like, I was here
to check it out. So where can everyone listen or watch your movies? When is your feature film coming out? Like, right. Plug everything.
Plugging everything here. Love the good plug. The feature film, which we just finished the director's cut of. The feature film is, and it's another rom-com. This one has Jabuki Young White. He's a comic. Has Francesca Rielli from Stranger Things. Jerry Ferrara from Entourage, Alex Moffat from SNL, Taylor Hill, the Victoria's Secret model, Catherine Cohen, the comedian, very funny.
Damn.
Brian Muller, great actor, and Arturo Castro from Comedy Central. This, I have no idea when it's coming out. We just handed in the director's cut. There's a long journey ahead of trying to get into a festival or see what happens. Hopefully, my dream is that one day people will be able to see it. So I hope that that happens. And then you can, otherwise I'm active. I'm bad at texting, but I'm good at Instagram.
Yeah.
Jonah Feingold. And then I probably can't technically legally say this yet, but there's a new podcast project that I'm working on.
Ooh.
With Hinge, official collab, which will be cool.
Sorry for shitting on Hinge.
No, we can shit on Hinge.
I wasn't shitting on it.
We love Hinge. We don't love Coffee Meets Bagel. So that's where you'll hear my voice more. And yeah, thank you for reaching out. Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Awesome. Good vibe, good energy in this kitchen.
Thanks. All right. Bye, everyone.
Goodbye.